Hello and welcome back to our Marketing Insights podcast. Today we're going to be looking at the title Brand and Deliver, which is really interesting because brands shouldn't just be there to look great. It is about delivering. But more interestingly, we're looking back at the 20 years of being in the business of branding and joined by our marvellous creative director, Elmas.
Hi, Charlotte. I'm not loving the whole 20 years thing, I'll be honest.
Wealth of experience and knowledge.
Yeah, you say that. I say wrinkles. and degrading eyesight, but let's not worry about that at the moment. Yes, it is 20 years.
I think what's really interesting is how branding and how the pressure on brands has changed in the last 20 years, yeah. And how we can use a lot of that learning and insight to look at how we future-proof and develop brands for the future.
Yeah, okay, I totally agree. And I think, you know, when I set Drew up over 17 years ago and people would meet people at networking events and they say, what do you do? And you'd be like, I run a branding agency. And 17 years ago, it's still quite an unknown word. I know that sounds quite odd because they'd be like, what is branding? And you say, well, is it a logo? And it's like, well, no, it's more than a logo. And as we've progressed and we've now realised that even human beings are brand identities, and it's how someone carries himself. I think it's going to sound a bit creepy, but it's how someone smells and feels as well. Which is the whole package for a brand. But just taking it way back to, you know, as you said, 20 years ago, essentially, that is almost as old as Facebook is. Facebook didn't exist until 2004, which seems absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But 20 years ago, there were things like, if you wanted your brand and to be across digital, which bear in mind we were still really learning what that meant then you only really had 6 typefaces to choose from. Can you imagine?
6.
Like it's just crazy. More than that. You know, you'd find we were very heavily reliant on those days in using Pantone swatch books. And a Pantone is a way of keeping a colour consistent. So it's a globally renowned colour service in, apart from Asia, which has Dicks, D-I-C-S. And, you know, you can give someone in the States a Pantone reference for your orange, 3-2-1 something, and they will match it to one that's in the UK, and it was really great. But then the thing about Pantones is the client would then say, well, can you match my lovely, vibrant, one colour orange to something that I'll see on the screen? And at that time, you literally had 256 colours to choose from.
Wow. And what do we have now?
Millions. Yeah. Well, maybe not millions, and please don't hold me to that, podcast listeners. But we certainly have,
rather than
6 digital fonts, we have, I think last count was something like 330,000 and growing. 100,000, I should say.
So like everything in life, compared to 20 years ago, we have a vast amount of choice, way more options, makes it more difficult to pick.
Yeah,
How has that changed when building brands then to now?
In many respects, I mean, I guess maybe it's the quality of a brand still has to come down to something that is recognisable in its purest form. So, and many respects, that hasn't really changed. You know, you really do want to start off with black and white, so that you can see the positive and negative space. As I'm now talking about logo designs and monograms and that type of thing. I guess the where that came from is clients would say, well, I need to put a one colour advert into the press because that's the cheapest way of advertising your brand or your marketing yourself.
Gosh, yeah.
I know, or like a fax machine.
Hitting a print deadline. That was a long time ago. Is that published? Yeah, done. Already seen by 10,000 people.
Right. You know, it is the speed that things change, which is what I'm going to go on to with the tips, I guess, for the future. I mean, it's incredible because things such as fonts used to be things called PostScript or bitmapped. They were really hard to change. You know, they were very locked down by the typographer. You used to have to, if you wanted a font that you wanted an italic and the italic didn't exist, but you could kind of open the font in something called Fontographer and you could adapt it. Now those things don't really exist anymore because basically we've got thousands more typefaces. There's loads more choice and people have really cottoned on to the fact that that's why a brand is so important. Because even the way a font looks, if you've got quite a heavy slab serif, it will look much more established than something that's kind of much more fluid and sans serif, a bit like our Drew and Rose brand. So, yeah, it's super interesting. I don't even know if I answered your question.
Absolutely. So when we're looking at brand development then, sort of over the last 20 years compared to now, what are you seeing that we can learn from for how we develop brands over the next 2 to 3 years?
I think it's all about omnichannel. So it's all about the different areas that these brands and logos are going to be seen and what do they relate to. I have got 5 tips, which I'll go through. One that isn't on there, but because I feel like it's almost so obvious now, is the difference between look at something that in 3 dimensions, essentially. So walking into Nike Town, you know, you've got window graphics, you've got their logo on bags, and it will be the entire identity with the swoosh and Nike Town. Maybe even a call to action, some marketing. Certainly in the window graphics, you'll have their most recent campaign. Actually, if you really boil that down to looking at their Instagram page, the icon will probably just, I haven't looked, but I'm pretty sure it will just be the swoosh. And it's that change in the amount of deliverables that we now have to think about as brand strategists, which I find really fascinating. So that's not in my top tips. Do you want me to talk about our top tips?
Yeah, let's debate.
Okay. So let's look forwards. And some things are already very, very much carried out and have been, for example, since 1997. But I think it's becoming even more obvious as we travel through time. 1997, Steve Jobs took the reins of Apple back again and did things like iTunes, iMac, not quite iPad, but almost. And basically put a lowercase i in front of everything, which was super clever, I think, because you're essentially productizing Apple. Apple in itself is an interesting brand name. However, the thing that really, and I think you said this once, I was like, oh my goodness, Charlotte, I've just bought myself an iWatch or an Apple Watch. And you were like, no, it's just watch. They actually say that they, Tim Cook, who's now the CEO, he didn't want it. He didn't want an iWatch. He wanted it to be Apple Watch. Now, I don't actually believe that.
I wonder whether they just couldn't get it.
Yeah, it was a trademark problem.
It was a trademark issue.
Yeah.
Then Apple, again, with their, I think, because it's such a brave and bold brand, they just went, no, we're just going to call it this.
Yeah, it's very confident.
But it is interesting, isn't it, how over the years you've got the bigger brands now, any brands have sub-brands that are not all named exactly like the title. They have that bravery in there. And I think you wouldn't have seen that.
What's your preference, though? If you look at, you know, you've got Amazon Prime.
Alexa.
Yeah, Alexa. What, like, and they're all quite different.
Different names.
Like, what's your...
So I prefer where there's a connection between the two because I'm like, well, why not just have them as separate businesses? Why have them under a brand when they're clearly known under that brand? Why do they need a totally different name and identity? But I think that, again, that's just personal preference. I think a lot of big brands feel they need to be different because in case there is any type of negative sentiment towards one product that is different to the others. I think consumers are way too clever for that now. It really doesn't matter. Especially like in Amazon, using the example, which is now multi-discipline subscription. So you're buying one subscription, but you're actually getting the benefit of all of the products.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the music, you've got the delivery, you've got everything else. And it's the same with Apple, really, albeit they never really give that benefit, because it's always you pay for everything. But I prefer having the connection. So when you see the brand family, there is a connection and a strand between it all.
I'm not surprised that you said that. And this is, you know, some of our listeners might know this, but I know that one of your favourite brands is Soho House. But if you, you know, if you look at all of the ones that are around the world, they have a connection. And you know that as soon as you walk through the doors of a house that's in, I don't know, Rome compared to little house, you're going to have the same sense, you're going to have the same welcome.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you're saying about sensory, that brands, the difference between brands now and brands in 20 years ago is that they are way beyond the page, they're way beyond words. It is a sensory experience. It's every single touch point, physical, digital, and in real life. Well, same as physical. That you feel and sense that brand, and there is, and you pick up, people pick up on inconsistencies. So the brand is the experience, it's not just the creative.
And I would say, like, that's a really interesting point, is for me, when I look at, I know that Amazon, sorry, talking a lot about Amazon, but they're starting to bring out their recent above, kind of above the line is AWS.
Yeah.
And I find it really hard to make that connection to Amazon and AWS. I almost feel I haven't quite got there yet. And maybe that's another podcast to discuss that. So it probably brings me nicely onto the next top tip, which I find mind-blowing. And it's certainly something that I want to look more into. And by the way, these top tips... don't go in any particular order, but this is number two. This is all about brand placement, right? So when, you know, we worked a lot with a production agency years ago, and they spent ages making partnerships with brands like Rolex, because they wanted to sit, you know, they have within their film that they were about to produce. It's gone much deeper than that. And now we have the metaverse. And we have, I don't even know if they're Gen Z, I suppose they are, the new Gen Zs who are aged between 7 and 14, who are really malleable with their kind of brand's requirements and what they're looking for. So the metaverse and gaming, like Roblox, has become a huge area for bringing your brand out. Now that's more of a, I guess that's going beyond the brand into advertising, but...
Well, it's a really interesting point, because actually it's the new retail, it's the new high street.
Yeah.
You were going to get more of that generation on the metaverse and in gaming and in games, where you can do product placement, brand placement, beyond the high street.
Which is mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, because usually, it used to be previously, even just a few years ago, it was, you know, this generation of the baby boomers were on this channel, so you have that strategy for this. Now it's not even channel, it's like, it's actual, I suppose it's actual areas, such as metaverse versus hospitality versus retail space.
Yeah, it is. And that's kind of what I was going back to, and I was talking about how, you know, 20 years ago, whether we think it was easier or not to release a brand, because there were less, I don't know, digital systems, I suppose, out there. Now it's like you have to think of your brand identity and how it will be rolled out across things that...
Well, I suppose also it's why branding and brand strategists and creatives have to be combined with data analysts and marketeers. And channel specialists to really get a brand out there, because while 15 to 20 years ago it was easier to launch a brand because there was less assets to build, but now there's more opportunity to reach niche people in certain times in certain areas, and there's more ways of getting your brand out there.
And I mean, that kind of takes me on to my next one, which quite nicely segues into it, and that's the sort of interactive brands that you almost have control over, so they're augmented reality. Again, that's kind of something that I think about 10 years ago we were looking at. We had a product range for a hotel brand, and we're looking at ways of how to roll that brand identity out, but in an augmented reality environment. And it blew my mind. But it's very fluid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very tech. So it's something to be. So let's take it back down to earth a bit. And something that we can really get behind right now. And a bit like a no-brainer in terms of a scaling brand, so the Nike tick all the way up to the full scale, your values. Sustainability is and will continue to be the biggest thing that people are looking for an emotional connection to a brand identity. And having your brand values really, really roll out in your identity, I think is absolutely essential.
And you've seen it. I mean, I think that personally, I think they're too late. They're doing it because they now have to. They should have been doing this a long time ago. So I think brands that have been doing it for a long time are more valuable because they're on to the next thing, more ethical, more global ethics. But even just using the example of McDonald's. McDonald's now use their very expensive ad space to talk about what they're doing on sustainability, recycling, reusing, how they reuse their oil, what they've done with their staff. So it's ethical and value-led stuff that's now coming through in adverts, not products. Mm. Again, I think they're too late. They should have done it a long time ago. But it's really interesting that they are doing it. Because there's a whole mix now between what are key messages, what are advertising messages.
So true, isn't it? And I guess, you know, in a way, I don't want to get any complaints about this, but this podcast gone slightly off topic because it's much more all-consuming. I mean, I think brand is all-consuming.
Yes, it is in everything.
But I also think this podcast could have been very much just about logos, but I kind of wanted to go much further beyond that. And you're absolutely right. The whole, you know, we are behind as a society. The brands that should be doing this are still catching up. And I think people like BP with an identity that looks like essentially a flower and has green and yellow, you know, they tried to do it after a massive oil spill of, I can't remember which year it was, but it was years ago. And it's like, gosh, really? Like, yeah. That's a bit late. So yeah, making sure as a client that your values are front and centre of whether it's a rebrand or a fresh brand or even a product range off of your corporate identity. And then the last one, which I want to talk to our developers about, because I think this is possibly a mixture of analytical data versus geolocation versus tone of voice and that all-important archetype. Mm. So a brand that actually changes, is self-generating, reflective upon who you are as a person.
Yeah, super interesting.
Super interesting, right? I just think its tone of voice could be literally talking directly to that customer. But it would change, you know, I'm a caregiver, you're very much a creator, and you're, you know, mixed with, gosh, what would you be mixed with? Lover. And I think your, you know, the brand identity that was spin up, and I'm saying this is very much online, because you'd all on social media, because you'd have to have that analytical data to back it up, but it could be really interesting.
Yeah, I think there is so much more to do in brands, the communication they give based on who is viewing on what, when and where, rather than just throwing everything out all the same. It is harder to build, but it's not impossible, and it doesn't have to be that costly. But to be really developing your key messaging and branding to different personas in different areas through different channels.
And maybe
it's a big future.
It's a big future, but I think in its simplest form, if you think of geolocation, and it would just be a language change, depending on where you are. If you're in an Arabic country, then it spins up something.
But it can be so much more clever than that, based on what your persona is, channel you've come from, whether this is the first, second or third visit to your website. You could be seeing different content.
Nice.
You know, there's lots more on that to do.
Nice. Sure. Well, let's get our developers onto it. And what I've done is I found some case studies, and I'm going to put links into the synopsis for this podcast.
Okay.
And it's one of those podcasts I think I want to come back to maybe every year.
Yeah.
And see what's progressed in the world of branding.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's been super insightful. Thank you for listening. And if you did find that interesting, please do follow us at the Marketing Insights Podcast by Drew and Rose. And please do send us your comments and get involved in the next topic.